ladies and gentlemen, live from the West Coast, it's time for Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look into combat sports.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
It is absolutely necessary that we all get together, we work together, we respect each other, we like and love each other.
And now, the host of the longest-running fight show in radio and internet history.
I'm getting tired of people running from me in the ring. Mike Tyson, Holyfield, you a bunch of bums. Stand up and be a man and fight a real fighter.
Pedro Fernandez.
I remember that George Foreman clip going viral. I did the interview for FNN TV down there in Galveston, Texas. George had just knocked out a former light heavyweight champion. I mean, he was looking pretty good as far as a big guy was concerned. The comeback was going on, no doubt about that. And then this thing sort of went viral before the internet. I mean, it just did. It went viral. It was like 1990. The internet wasn't happening yet, but ESPN was showing it, and, you know, Sports Channel was showing it, Sports Center was showing it, all these different places were showing it. I was getting all this play, and the bottom line was, didn't pay off that well, because the bottom, you know, when the internet wasn't happening. Who am I? My name is Pedro Fernandez. Welcome to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, of course, aka WBC Boxing TV. This is your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA. Of course, hour number two of a two-hour presentation brought to you by the Sports Byline Broadcast Network. Of course, coming to you from the city by the bay, the world's most beautiful city, San Francisco, California. If you come here, what can I say? Bring a lot of money, because it's expensive. There's no doubt about that. Open phone lines around the planet as we're talking boxing for the next hour. Of course, we'll talk about boxing in depth with Muhammad Ali about 40 minutes past the hour. We'll go into depth as far as his life's concerned. But I'll touch on some funny parts of Hector Camacho's life. You know, it's sort of good when you can go back in time with these guys and sort of like trip, you know, like, hey, we were there. It sort of brings back fun. Anyway, hopefully some of my stories about Hector Camacho will transform into make you smile a little bit, because Hector, the Camacho man, was a happy guy. Whether he was coked out or not, he was always happy. There's no doubt about that. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide is brought to you by the World Boxing Council, the WBC.
Hector Camacho may be boxing's greatest showman since Muhammad Ali, and certainly one of its best fighters. A few days ago in Madison Square Garden, he again successfully defended his lightweight title. His share of the purse was said to be about $1 million, so it's no wonder he likes the fight game just the way it is. But some view boxing as nothing more than legalized brutality, a sport like others that leaves many of its performers damaged for life. Those involved in boxing, from managers to TV networks to fighters themselves, resist any changes. Why? Well, just ask the Macho Man, Hector Macho Camacho.
Well, I've been all around the world. I met ambassadors, presidents. I'm important. I'm important because of boxing. A little cockroach that was crawling around the ghetto. It's important.
Maybe not important, but certainly rich and famous. With a new recording contract and an eye on an acting career, he's been seen everywhere from Ring Magazine to Playgirl. Just 4 years ago, he was on parole, doing time for auto theft, and fighting for $800 a pop, mostly in New York. He's since gone from a borrowed bicycle to a Corvette, two Maseratis, and a Lamborghini. Flash and personality have become his trademark, so much so that you almost forget that first and foremost, he's a boxer. A great boxer. The lightweight division is the best in boxing, and in 29 professional fights, Camacho has never lost. He's the current WBC lightweight champion, 135 pounds of speed and technique that belies the fact he's just 24 years old. He's typical of the young and successful in this game. He can't imagine ever losing or ever being hurt.
It could happen, but it ain't gonna happen. You gotta put that in your head. It ain't gonna happen. It's a poor man's sport. I came from the street. My mother was on welfare. I had all my hopes in it. All my hopes. from head to toe. I got my mother's house. I support my son. I got cars forever. Nice training camp. Good people. Well known. Well loved. Can't complain. Hey, break my jaw. Bottom line is, after you break my jaw, I still got my $1 million.
The Harlem Hector. The Harlem Heckler, Hector Camacho, of course, 79-6 as a professional, 38 KOs, never got stopped. Of course, had the great fight with Julio Cesar Chavez, 1992. I made a lot of money on that one. They brought me down to Las Vegas. We were broadcasting, of course, from the Las Vegas Hilton, and they were giving me buku money because evidently they needed to do radio shows. They wanted to do this big scene, have this big scene in the press area with all these radio shows. We're going to broadcast like all day long and this and that. So they said, how many hours a day can you broadcast? I said, well, the network says they want me to do 2 hours. Can you do 4? So, okay, we did 4. So for that whole week buildup, Don King Productions, of course, and it was on pay-per-view. So they were pushing this every day, sports channels. Anyway, Camacho would lose. We'd get drubbed, of course, by Julio Cesar Chavez. And I think that was his last big shot at the big time. Let's talk about boxing results, of course, over the weekend. Unbeaten prospects Kevin Luis Munoz, 12-0 out of Argentina, won the South American flyweight title by beating some guy with a horrible record whose name I'm not going to go into because it's not worth it. He's 8-7. Kid you not, I'm not disrespecting him because he had a record of 8-7, but you know, he's got a name, Matias Emmanuel Errate Montserrat. Okay, I said it, man. That's your claim to fame. You're 8-7, a couple of draws, 3 KOs. You got stopped in round 4. It was a 10-round main event in Santa Fe, Argentina. Now, wow. Joe Jones. Everybody thought that Joe Jones was going to fight. No, Joe Jones was like a small type of guy. I mean, big deal. 11-4 now, 8 KOs. Got stopped. Heavyweight Joey the Tank, Dohueco. Now 21-8-4, 12 KOs. A first round KO winner. Of course, that was, Saturday night at the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia. Of course, man, talk about Philly coming back as far as boxing is concerned. Next week is Jaren Ellis. Of course, the undefeated lad, 24-0 with, 26-0 with 24 KOs. Watch him. Believe me. Watch him. And of course, the main event on the zone yesterday, competitive performance until they turned on the bell, till the bell rang. I'm talking about bottom line is Carl Frampton comes alive. He didn't come alive yesterday. Of course, he got lit up like a White House Christmas tree. Now 28-2, 16 KOs. I mean, he lost that one fight to Leo Santa Cruz. I think it was a split decision after beating Santa Cruz with a decision. So the bottom line is, you know, he was sort of like undefeated. Could have been undefeated, but he was undefeated at a lighter weight. And people laugh at me. They say, you know, what's 4 pounds? What's 4 pounds? Well, obviously, 4 pounds was a significant difference here, an advantage for Mr. Herring. I mean, he was taller, he was leaner, he was longer, and guess what? Size matters in two things again, pornography and combat sports. Of course, the time was 1 minute and 40 seconds in to round number 6. An uppercut ended it, basically ended it, as Frampton's corner threw in the towel. At the end of the day, Frampton is now 34 years old, and he announced his retirement. More props to him. He might be ready to go off to the Boxing Hall of Fame. Of course, we'll talk that over with our boxing PhD next Saturday. I'm talking about Socrates Palmer. Of course, Palmer, who is on a roll, having picked upsets like 3 of the last 5 weeks, he picked upsets. He picked Frampton to win, so the upset streak came to an end there. Anyway, as I said, Frampton comes alive, is retiring at 34 years old. Of course, not too many big fights this Easter weekend. Of course, you know, the Holy Week and things like that. And speaking of the Holy Week, I want to mention a message from Mauricio Sulaiman, of course, the president of the World Boxing Council. He said yesterday, as his family and he celebrate the Holy Week, Mauricio wanted me to wish everybody watching on WBC Boxing TV and listening on Ring Talk Live worldwide, as well as our internet platforms and stations, that Mr. Sulaiman and the WBC wish everyone happiness and good health that extends far beyond the Holy Week. Mauricio says boxing is coming back. In fact, for more on boxing, you can always visit the bilingual WBC website, WBCboxing.com. Straight up, boxing, as I said, coming back to Philly next week. With the kid Darren Harris, but April the 10th, of course, that'll be on Showtime. April the 10th as well, DAZN, Conor Benn, son of Nigel Benn. Nigel Benn can crack, man, no doubt about that. Maybe one of the hardest hitters, not the hardest hitter ever, in the super middleweight division. Taking on Samuel Vargas, he'll be fighting at welterweight. The kid can fight, I don't think he's lost a fight yet. And, of course, April 17th, the fraud of all frauds, Jake Paul, the YouTuber guy, is going to fight on pay-per-view, a cruiserweight fight. I didn't know he was that big, 190 pounds, 200 pounds. Anyway, he's taking on Ben Askren. Ben Askren's a guy that sort of fights, He's an MMA fighter. He's a wrestler. He's like a college wrestler. The best thing he can do, they call it dirty wrestling. And he rumbles around and he makes you like, he tires you out. I mean, it's nothing like, no MMA with elbows and that kind of good stuff. That's not what you're getting out of Ben Askren. And of course, Ben Askren is going to engage in a boxing match with the guy that's supposedly trained as a boxer. This is a no-win situation for Askren, except maybe getting paid. But by the end of the day, Jake Paul is just another fraud. He wants to fight. Look, I don't know why he hasn't fought Scott Cuddy yet. Scott Cuddy's in shape. Scott's ready to go. Anyway, the co-feature, Frank Mir. Remember him? He's been on the show many, many times. In fact, he signed the wall out here at the Sports Byline Studios, the Wall of Fame here. He autographed the wall. Anyway, the former two-time UFC heavyweight champion, taking on former cruiserweight champion Steve Cunningham. He was a Marine. They're going to fight at heavyweight. Cunningham used to fight at 200 pounds, 190 pounds, and he's going to take on Frank Mir, a 240-pound stud. Bottom line is, Frank Mir, how can I put this? Frank's been, how can I put this? He's been suspected of taking performance-enhancing drugs before, a.k.a. Flintstone vitamins. I don't know. Legally, I got to say this the right way, okay? But, you know, he's been suspected of taking performance-enhancing drugs before. I think at his advanced age, he's going to need some performance-enhancing drugs against Steve Cunningham. Bottom line is, though, he's got some size there. And, of course, size matters in two things, pornography and combat sports. April 17th, former 154-pound champion Tony Harrison, good fighter, no doubt about that, taking on Brian Perella. Those guys will roll it. On Fox at 154 pounds, that's April 17 on Fox. Of course, April 23rd, UFC Fight Pass. Heather Hardy taking on Jessica Kamara, female lightweight, 135 pounds. Always going for the females. Now, of course, outside of Clarissa Shields, I love female boxing. April 24th, the stud, the kid from Mexico, former WBO 122-pound champion, now WBO 126-pound champion, Emmanuel Navarrete. Of course, man, what can I say about this kid except for the fact that he's lost one fight. He's like a huge knockout record. I mean, just the man. Taking on Christopher Diaz. Poor Mr. Diaz. I don't think he's got a chance here. But the co-feature is going to feature this guy that's been knocking out everybody, knocking everybody dead in one round. Edgar Berlanga. He's like 16-0 with 16 knockouts. Good luck on that one, because Desmond Nicholson, he's supposed to last more than one round. That's the bet. Everybody thus far has only been able to last one round with Mr. Berlanga, but this guy's supposedly able to go more than one round. Nobody's picking him to win, but they're picking him to definitely last more than one round. Of course, May the 1st, Derek Chisora, Battle of Old-Timers, going on to zone heavyweights, taking on Joseph Parker. Parker, the former WBO heavyweight title holder. If there ever was a guy fortunate to win a title, it was Joseph Parker. That was your welfare check, baby. Not time to go away. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV.
Now, more of Ring Talk with Pedro Fernandez.
This is something new from the mighty Tower of Power on the soul side of town. But check it, the lead singer, he got fired. Tower of Power went through like 19 or 20 lead singers. The longest guy they ever had was a guy named Larry Braggs. And I was doing these gigs after my KMBR job back in the 90s. I was doing these gigs down on Fisherman's Wharf as an MC at this nightclub, introducing this band called Executive Suite. Well, one day I show up at the Executive Suite session, and guess what? This guy Larry Braggs is singing, and like I'm blown away by it. So Larry's there for a few months, and before you know it, I heard Tower of Power, and Jeff Tamalier was a guitar player at the time, former Starship guitar player, and he says to me, you know, we're looking for a lead singer. I said, you need to check out this brother down here with Executive Suite, Larry Braggs. Check him out. Anyway, so they signed Larry Braggs to a temporary contract, and then Doc Koopa, Steven Kupka, who's the co-founder of the band, has dinner with me, him and Jeff Tamalier over at Ricky Sports Theater in San Leandro, California. May Ricky Ricardo rest in peace. So we're having, dinner, and he says to me, yeah, Larry's just a temporary guy. He's like a studio musician, this and that. We don't have long-time plans for Larry Braggs. Anyway, Larry Braggs lasted 12 years straight up. Of course, he became the lead singer of the Temptations after that. Now he's doing a solo act. So, Larry Braggs, man, he could rock, no doubt about that. You are tuned to the longest running, oh, but this guy that the Tower of Power just signed and then they've gotten rid of, he took him to some new heights as far as the Billboard charts are concerned, stuff they haven't, enjoyed in like 25 or 30 or maybe 40 years. So the Tower of Power rode basically back to, fame on this kid's shoulders. And of course, Marcus Scott, he decided he was taking a walk and of course they fired him instead. Anyway, enough Tower of Power. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, aka WBC Boxing TV. Of course, I've been touching on the career of the Macho Man, Hector Camacho, and his life and times and this and that and the good times I got to spend around him. But the bottom line is Hector was a scandalous dude.
We get in this car, we're driving. We're hitting close to Texas. I said, let's pull over for the night. He goes, no, you just need to close your eyes for a little bit. I'll keep driving. And I'm like, Macho. He goes, I'm okay. I won't go speed. I said, okay. And I fall asleep. I don't know how long I was closed my eyes, but it wasn't long. He taps me on my shoulder. He goes, hey, I need money for the toll. And I'm like, the toll. And I open my eyes. And I see the border. We're on the line to the border into Mexico. I'm like, what are you doing? The patrol looks and they wait for us to go into the security check. And I'm like, it's okay, Macho, no problem. I'll take care of this. Let me talk. He goes, yeah, but that's not the problem. I got a little present in the trunk. I got a kilo in the trunk. And I said, okay, Macho, put the top down. Where it was a convertible jack. And I need you to do Macho time right now, right here. We push the top down. He jumps up out of this car. He jumps onto the hood of this $90,000 Jag. And he stands up and he's screaming, where's Chavez? Everybody went crazy. The Border Patrol comes. Everybody started, come on, Macho. The Border Patrol guy passes me with a dog. The dog goes crazy. The dog starts barking and scratching. I look in the rearview mirror, and the Border Patrol takes the dog and hits him with the dog. He goes, shut up, that's Camacho.
Bottom line is Camacho was sneaking a kilo of cocaine into Mexico. Speaking of Mexico, of course, they've got two fighters going. I'm talking about Antti Luiz, not my favorite guy. Of course, a former world heavyweight champion, man, to pull off that stunning upset of Anthony Joshua when he knocked Joshua dead. Of course, that was, put it this way. It was bad for boxing. Why was it bad for boxing? Because this fat guy ended up defending the heavyweight championship of the world by going into training camp weighing 317 pounds. In other words, when Andy Ruiz stepped in the ring for the rematch with Anthony Joshua, he weighed 287. Bottom line is, he was a big fat pig. Any other weight class in the world of boxing, he'd be disqualified. I mean, he couldn't fight as a junior welterweight being 45 or 50 pounds overweight. And here he was probably 100 pounds overweight. Anyway, now Andy Ruiz is signed with the Team Canelo. Of course, Ryan Garcia, a couple of hot studs on that Team Canelo roster, no doubt about that. But Andy Ruiz, or Antti Luiz, formerly Antti Luiz, but you're only as good as your last fight, as far as this show is concerned. In his last fight, he should have been arrested for impersonating a heavyweight fighter, especially a heavyweight champion. I mean, you're the heavyweight champion of the world, and you show up to training camp at 300 pounds after doing your share of suspected blow and, you know, and drinking all that cognac and this and living the high life and becoming an even fatter pig than you were to begin with. Okay, and then, hey, you know, we're being real here. We're being real. Okay, so he gains all this weight. He doesn't go out there and put up a much of an effort as far as trying to defend the heavyweight championship. How could you when you're 300 pounds? I guess the biggest part of his day was breakfast and dinner and lunch and many of them. Because the bottom line is he ate like a pig. Got him, but now with Team Reynoso, evidently he's refocused, coming back down in weight. I saw a couple of pictures of him. He looked pretty lean. I mean, lean for Andy Ruiz, but is it or Antti Luiz? But is that lean for a heavyweight boxer anyway? 33-2. 22 KOs, taking on Chris Areola. Areola hasn't fought in 2 years. He lost to Adam Konacki. I think that was a TKO loss in 2019, but he's 38-6 with a draw and 32 KOs. But he's a veteran. I mean, Mexican-American. I mean, this makes good as far as these battle of Mexican heavyweights and stuff. Because in the old days, remember, a Mexican heavyweight like 15 or 20 years ago was just a fat middleweight. I mean, but now, there are, you know, sizable Mexican athletes, this and that. Some of them in the heavyweight division. I mean, you know, Cain Velasquez was the USC heavyweight champion as far for a couple of years. I think he had two different title runs. So the bottom line is there are some big Mexicans per se. It's not the rule, but there are some big Mexicans, no doubt about that. So Areola and Andy Ruiz going to hook it up in this 12-round heavyweight fight. What can I expect? if they lay it according to script, the script is that Andy Ruiz is supposed to win this and come back and, like, you know, say, hey, I'm trim, I'm ready, I'm with Team Canelo, I'm focused, this and that, I'm ready to go back and challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship. And then maybe that little minuscule fan base that he had, you know, like six people in his hometown and maybe his family too, maybe they'll come around and support him again, because I think I thought he should have been banned from boxing for showing up 317 pounds to camp. I mean, that would be like me showing up for training camp at 220 pounds. It just would. That's the equivalent of that. And I fought at 140 pounds. This guy was like 150, 120 pounds overweight. That's how fat he was. Okay, we'll see what happens May the 1st when they hook it up on the Zone. Of course, if you haven't got the Zone yet, what is it called? DAZN. Check it out. Go to Google this and that. It's an app. You can get on your computer, you can get on your smart TV, you can get on your smartphone, and some people still don't have smartphones. Joe Diaz, of course, the man from Phoenix, Arizona, the man that ran that top level boxing gym down there in Phoenix for all those years, had all those great fighters, this and that. He called me and I said to him, can I send you something? He goes, I can't take texts. What do you mean you can't take? Why can't you take texts? I still got a flip phone. Frank Maldonado, a little boxing veteran, a trainer here in Northern California, living in the Excelsior District. I saw him a couple of weeks ago. Same thing. Still got the flip phone. I didn't know do they still make these? They should ban those flip phones. Anyway, how did I get into flip phones? Anyway, Andy Ruiz and Chris Ariola hook it up 12 rounds, of course, in a heavyweight contest. I expect Andy Ruiz to win and winning going away. If he doesn't win going away, it just shows you that he never really was much. Straight up, he's only 31 years old. Ariola is like 36. Old guys, doesn't happen too much for boxing and boxing. You know that. This is the young. And I tried to explain that to Tavares Cloud, the former light heavyweight champion of the world, is now continue his comeback at cruiserweight. He says, you know, I got a new weight class and I'm looking forward to this and that. And I tried to tell him, you know, nobody ever goes out a winner in this game. In fact, the whole game of boxing is predicated, even MMA to an extent, is predicated on the fact that the strong eat the weak. You know, the young eat the old. So you're old. You're like 40 years old, and he got all pushed out of shape about it, man. I was just trying to be real with him. Of course, then Hector Martinez, the capitalist that he is, my best friend, of course, he comes on and he says, man, you're trying to put the guy down for making a living. No, I'm trying to straighten the guy out. In other words, go get a real job. Go get a real job. Don't come back at the age of 40 and try to box. And I don't think it's sound. And of course, guys are now boxing late into their 40s. And some people say, well, you know, people can box later in life as long as they're still in shape. Boxing is not swimming. It's not golf. It's not baseball. You're not hitting baseballs. You're hitting people. And guess what? People are hitting you. And it's not, and as real can get. Anyway, bottom line is, in our next segment, I'm going to take you, on a bit of a tour around the world with the greatest. I'm talking about Muhammad Ali, of course, passed away a few years ago. My guy in 1993 and 1994 and 1994 and 1993, they hired me to go to China and be part of a TV team. And when I met Muhammad Ali at the airport that day, we were going to China. And I met Muhammad Ali, the SFO, that day. They said, Harold Smith, the promoter, says to him, this young man's like my son. I wish you would treat him the same, this and that. And Ali treated me like I was his son, man, forever. And I'll never forget how I sort of broke in with him. We were in Beijing and we were all starving, and they even tried to feed Muhammad Ali pork. He's a Muslim. The Chinese didn't know. They were giving us pork fried rice and pork fried this and pork fried that. And Ali's a Muslim. He can't eat pork. So anyway, so we're starving. I think he lost 12 pounds. I lost about 7 pounds in this week and a half we were in Beijing because of the food. So I'm going to McDonald's, and I see Lonnie Ali in the lobby of the hotel. And I said to her, she goes, hi, Pedro, how are you? And I go, oh, Mrs. Ali, call me Lonnie. Okay, Mrs. Ali, I'm going to McDonald's. Oh, you're going to McDonald's, Pedro? You are, really? I go, yeah, it's like, whoa, I hit the jackpot at the lottery. She said to me, would you bring Muhammad a cheeseburger? I said, how many? Anyway, I bought him like a cheeseburger, double cheeseburger, a quarter pounder of cheese, Big Macs, fries, bought him almost the entire McDonald's menu for him and his wife Lonnie. He ate a lot of it. Of course, he loved it. The fact that we got together after that, and of course he brought me on that PR tour in 1994. I was his PR guy and his bodyguard. What can I say? Priceless times with Muhammad Ali. I'm blessed. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA. More Ali after the break on Sports Byline, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. course, we come to you on the Sports Byline Broadcast Network, iHeartRadio, Sirius XM, Satellite Radio, Channel 217, and a plethora of other internet platforms. Bottom line is, we're celebrating the life and times of the greatest, Muhammad Ali!
But I do want to bring on our first guest. He's a magnificent young man. Nobody else has aroused so much passion during the decade of the 60s. I have known him almost from the beginning. He came to New York first as a brash, arrogant, obnoxious youngster. Nothing about him has changed. Except for the palpable decline in his pugilistic skills, because once he was a very great fighter, now he is a worn relic of the past, a faded hero of yesteryear, living off weak opponents at the moment, but still mouthing words that he can no longer employ the skills to back up. I've traveled the world with him. I've seen him alienate nation after nation with his braggadocio. And he still proclaims to be that which he is no longer, the heavyweight champion of the world. So I am going to bring out, in all of the futility that emblazons his current efforts, the former heavyweight champion of the world, Muhammad Ali.
I sat back there and I listened to every word you said. Howard, every time you open your mouth, you should be arrested for air pollution. You give me more trouble. You give me more trouble than my opponents. Now, like, I heard you were going to host the show, so I thought I would give you the honor of coming to talk with you. Now, what do you want to talk about?
I want to talk with you, first of all, about the fact that you would still be in impoverished anonymity in this country if I hadn't made you famous.
Now, listen. Listen. Now, he's awful serious. I mean, you say you told me you made Floyd Patterson popular, but you know yourself, if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't really be who you are today. Because every time I fight, go to foreign countries, you would always be there, and you never would have gotten to those countries if it wasn't me. And lately, you haven't been able to follow me because I understand your budget is much cheaper.
What was it you told me? Don't make so much of that football guy, Dandy Don. We're still the number one act. Is that what you told me when you were in training for Frazier?
When was that?
When you came to the pool at the Americana Hotel and said, "Where's the white guy giving me all the trouble?"
You Jewish.
I do want to find out about your recent antics. I want to know why you continue to fight opponents who are obviously not qualified to meet you.
Well, Howard, right now, you know, it's a good question. And I think this is why people like you and like to hear us, because you say what you feel, I say what I feel. You ask me questions that some don't like, many want to hear. And you don't pull no punches. So what, like, I'm fighting the best men that are around for me to fight. I'm giving them all a chance. I could just sit down and I would say, wait for Joe Frazier, but Mac Foster, who I just fought, was ranked number 5 in the top 10 of the world. Here's a man who's been training all his life for the big time and probably never wouldn't have gotten the payday that he got if he hadn't fought me. Getting ready to fight, say, Joy Chevallo, Canadian, all Canada's behind him. I'm sure I'll beat him. But like he's having another shot at the title, and like what's his name, the boy you criticized,
Buster Mathis,
yes, who was the one who fought Joe Frazier for his so-called title during my
Muhammad. We didn't criticize Mathis. We criticized you. Why you weren't in shape for the fight.
Well, if I wasn't in shape for the fight, Mathis didn't say I wasn't in shape. You said that somebody said...
Mathis, he collapsed from fatigue.
No, he collapsed. That was the 12th round. And all, you know, a lot of people are saying that I'm not in shape for my fights, but, like, how much more shape do I have to be in? I'm still unscratched. I'm prettier than you, and you're a sports announcer. I know I'm prettier than you. If you look at me and look at you, I look better than you, and you don't box. So what type of shape do I have to be in? I win all of my fights. It's no, I would ask you this.
Will you do me a favor? Stand up and take your jacket off. I want the public to see that.
Let me ask you a question. Just ask your question. Let's pretend it's my show for 1 minute. All right.
It's a disaster.
Would you say
already?
That when I fought, say, all of the fellows that I've been fighting lately, would you say that they were in shape?
Yeah, except for Mathis. He didn't look
Mathis
real good
to me. Well, how did he go 12 rounds with me?
Because you weren't doing anything.
I wasn't
you
doing
were slow
nothing.
Footed, the hand and foot speed
there.
Gone. The
if
trick.
I was hitting
As
you,
your manager, Angelo if, Dundee,
if
your trainer, sitting
you,
right there, told me earlier, I don't know
you,
what we're going to do to get the lad
you,
serious.
Look, if, listen. Look, Joe Frazier, I wasn't in shape when I fought Frazier, many of them said. I was off 3 years. But yet it was Joe Frazier who had to be under intensive care for 1 month. When I fought Mac Foster, I was 226. They say the heaviest of my career. Mac Foster the other day just got out of the hospital in Japan. They wouldn't let him leave the country. Everybody I'm fighting lately is ending up in the hospitals. I'm unscratched. I'm unmarked. I'm overweight. I'm fat. But yet I'm always winning. And what? If I get in shape, it'll be a murder, wouldn't it?
As a matter of fact, your record for knockouts, I mean one-punch knockouts, is absolutely non-existent. You lack the killer instinct.
Only one time.
You no longer have the hand and the foot speed. You're overweight. You're not serious about your profession. And a decision is about to be made by Angelo Dundee no longer to handle you. Is that right, Angelo?
Why would you? Is this true, Angelo? Why would you? He's trying to cause dissension. I'm on him, and he's trying to put me on Angelo. But let me
What's
tell
your
you
evaluation of the men Frazier's fighting? Terry
well,
Daniels,
well,
Frazier, Ron Stanley.
I think Frazier's in a position where, like, when you're the champion, like he is, you have to fight anybody, but you have to be paid for it. And the college boy just fought Terry Daniels. Somebody put up the money, which was sufficient. And who's he fighting the next fight?
Ron Stanley, a heralded pugilist from Omaha, Nebraska.
Yes, but somebody thinks enough of it to put up probably $250,000. So who are we to complain when somebody thinks enough of him to put up $250,000? And Frazier would be out of his mind if he didn't take it because he's in it for a living. He's got a big family.
All
so
right,
I can't criticize
final question, because then I want to go to the audience for questions. Do you think Frazier is ducking you on the rematch? You guys can't fight again unless you
well,
fight for
I
Jack
really,
Kent Cook, and he
I,
wants it in
yes,
September.
I think he is. I think he's ducking because, like, I'm busy. Frazier, like, I have 7 more fights lined up in various countries, including Russia, of all places, if Frazier don't fight. But I think that Frazier's still recuperating from the physical punishment he took, as quiet as it's kept. And I think that they're picking opponents for him. They can't really hit him on, in his head too hard because the two fellas he's fighting, I think if I fought them, I'd be running out of the country. I wouldn't fight them. But at least the fellas I'm fighting are much better, but you at least heard of George Chevalo. You heard of James Ellis. You heard of Buster Mathis. You heard of Jurgen Blinn. So what I'm going to say, Mac Foster.
Jurgen Blinn, hair cheesecake.
I think as soon as Frazier really cooperates. He knows where my manager is. His manager knows how to contact me. And as soon as they're physically in shape, I think they'll be ready.
All right, these folks, I would think, would want to ask you some questions, and we're going to give them the opportunity to ask us both questions. We'll be back right after these. I think maybe you're about to face some people who'll prove tougher than Frazier for you, Muhammad. You up to the challenge?
No, I'm ready. These are all my people. They recognize who the real champion is.
All right, let's begin. We'll call upon you as you raise your hands. Let's begin with this lady in the blue dress right there.
Since you are vocal and you are a philosopher, do you have any political ambition?
No, I don't. I don't have no political ambitions. No, I don't. I don't control it. I don't write the books. And the problems that I'm confronting with politics have played no part in them.
That gentleman back there.
Do you think you would have won the Frazier fight had you not messed around in the 7th and 8th rounds?
I think I played around for 4 or 5 rounds that I shouldn't have, and I lost the 11th round. He shook me up completely. And the 15th round, he didn't shake me up like the 11th round, but he knocked me down. And I was right up at the count of three, but you lose a round when you're knocked down. So I know at least six rounds that I lost, but I think I won nine. I think that if the fight was judged round by round, punch by punch, and compared to the physical damage done to both fighters, it wouldn't have been no doubt that I won. But since the tax situation being like it is, it ain't really bad that we get two chances.
This gentleman right here.
Have you ever had any regrets about not going into the Army?
Not really, no.
Mr. Cosell, I'd like to know what Joe Namath is really like.
What Joe Namath is really like? He's a sensitive young man, very bright, who's got a great deal of charisma. He and the gentleman to my right are the two great named stars of their time. They fill a room by their very presence. He's also a swinger, and he likes young women who look like you. This young lady right here.
Hold on till we get that room over there.
Have you ever been an athlete?
Have I ever been an athlete? Depends upon the form, dear. But I was All Eastern Parkway in Brooklyn in stickball for 7 years.
Were you ever in top physical condition then? Can you judge
so how
him?
Can you say he wasn't in...
Was I ever in top physical condition? Let me tell you something. In May of 1966, when Ali was about to go against Henry Cooper for the second time and was in training over there, I trained Cooper in the Thomas A. Becket gym. Bar, that's what it really was, a British pub up on the second floor. Cooper's manager, Jimmy Wicks, saw me work out and said, "You should fight Ali, not my man." He was right.
Mr. Cosell, I'd like to know if you think that the Heisman Trophy, as it stands now, being always given to someone in the offensive backfield, is turning into a farce, the way they gave it out to Pat Sullivan.
I expressed myself in that regard at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga branch, some months ago. Heisman Trophy is a farce for many reasons. It's voted upon by a massive number of sports writers who, in most cases, haven't even seen the players play for whom they're voting. That's item number one. Item number two is that backs can't be compared with defensive linemen. There is no yardstick for measurement. Differences of position require different skills. Item number three, no player from a black college has ever gotten a single vote for the Heisman Trophy. Look at the roster of professional football. Leroy Kelly, Morgan State. Willie Davis, the great Green Bay end, number 87 of the past from Grambling. Buck Buchanan from Grambling. How in the world do you have anything with meaning when players like these have never even gotten a single vote? I think it's a farce. This gentleman in the striped shirt.
Muhammad, is Howard really your friend?
Is Howard my friend?
Yeah, is he really
next
your friend?
Next question. Well, I'll tell you.
Should we tell him
Howard
the truth?
Howard Cosell is a man of his profession, and he's tops in the business. And same with me and mine. And he's independent, I'm independent. He don't need me, and I don't need him. He speaks his piece, I speak mine. He respects me, I respect him. But I can't say he's my friend.
How long would he last in the ring with you?
How long would he last? Yes. You mean how hard would the blow have to be? Listen, Howard Cosell, he's a good man with his brains. He's not a fighter. And in the long run, he proves to be more successful than most fighters. He uses his brains.
Do you think there should be a gate in the ring for him to run out in case, you know what I mean, an escape route when he
no,
fights you?
No, he's one of the best men in the sport announcing field, and I miss him when he's not at ringside promoting my fights because he and I makes a good team. But one day I promise to slap him.
The love affair between Muhammad Ali and Howard Cosell, God, it lasted over a quarter century. You are tuned to Ring Talk Live Worldwide. Check it, your inside look at the world of boxing, MMA. Back after the break, of course, this is Sports Byline, iHeartRadio, SiriusXM, Satellite Radio, and of course, 1,000 other internet platforms. This is Ring Talk.
Ring Talk Live Worldwide, brought to you by the WBC, the World Boxing Council.
The horns of the mighty Tower of Power, probably circa 1995, the Northern California Veterans Boxer Association, of which I'm proudly wearing their membership jacket right now, of course, is going to have a meeting on April the 9th. Of course, that's going to be at the Italian-American Club there on Russia Street in the Excelsior District here in San Francisco. Everybody's got the social distancing going down. The bottom line is, join us if you like. I don't know if I'll be there. I don't know if Grandmaster Bill will be there, but I'm going to try to. Anyway, you've been listening or watching Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC TV, of course, WBC Boxing TV. Cuddy keeps correcting me in the other room on that one. WBC Boxing TV, of course, coming to you weekly, Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. Pacific. I'm live on Sports Byline, iHeartRadio. And, of course, the new broadcast, the stream, is coming to you on Twitch.tv, the Sports Byline USA channel. So you can always check us out there live at 11 a.m. Pacific time. Of course, Saturday and Sunday is 2 p.m. Eastern time. Or check us out on a delayed process. Of course, we've got delayed broadcasts going on as Twitch TV as well as carrying the delayed shows. And, of course, they carry them for 8 days. So you've got 8 days to carry a hot link as far as the rebroadcasting is concerned. After that, I think they turn into highlights. But the bottom line is our future is with Twitch.tv. There's absolutely no doubt about that. Check it out, the Sports Byline USA channel, Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Now, to a lot of you, this is Easter Sunday, the holiest of days in the year, and I wish you the very best as far as the year is concerned. At the end of the day, peace, love, and a ton of respect to you and your family. Thank you so much for tuning in to Ring Talk Live Worldwide, a.k.a. WBC Boxing TV. Straight up, the producer, Scott Cuddy. This is a Sports Byline production. So next time, peace, love, and a ton of respect.